Hello and welcome to another episode of the First 10 Pages. In case this is your first time here, hello. But also, this is what we do here. We discuss scripts, and it's called the First 10 Pages because in Hollywood, you better have those first 10 pages buttoned up because that's all you get to get the attention of someone in Hollywood. They give you 10 pages, and you better have a good, strong script or they're going to give you the boot. I mean, you probably have to get their attention faster and hold it longer, but that's pretty much the rule of thumb. Okay, so what are we doing this week? The Muppet Movie. Hi-ho, Kermit the Frog here. Okay, Kermit, not now. I'm just doing an intro. Okay. So, yeah, this week I'm working with the Muppets.
Animal, animal.
Okay, dude, go play a drum.
Bye-bye. Call back funny.
Anyway, we got a lot to talk about.
Hey, is it my turn to play sex?
Zoot, go walk Animal. He hasn't been walked all day.
That ain't my job.
All right, well then, well, go back, take a nap.
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay. Okay.
Am I on yet?
Oh no, I'm sorry, Miss Piggy. Not yet.
Well, hurry it along, dear.
I know, but Piggy, that is why I got you a sweet. I didn't just get it, because you're so sweet.
Don't be a kiss-up. It doesn't suit Foo.
No, I'm not kissing up. I'm trying to sweep you off your feet. Hooves. Nothing.
Watch it.
I like watching her walk out. That pig can shake it.
All right, The Muppet Movie. This was released in 1979, and most surprisingly, not by a major studio. The film was released by ITC Entertainment and EMI Films in the United States. ITC was the company that financed The Muppet Show. The Muppet Show, of course, was the reason we got The Muppet Movie. The Muppet Show was a syndicated TV series in the United States. New episodes, I believe, appeared on Mondays at 7:30, but in some areas it played throughout the week at 7:30. It was a really big success. It appealed to sort of the new adult crowd. Right? 18 to 20-somethings. People, you know, like the way people get high to SpongeBob, people were getting high to the Muppets and watching the Muppets and getting into the Muppets. It was that kind of a thing. It appealed to kids because, hey, it's talking frogs and chickens and things. And, oh, man. Hey, Camilla. Where's Gonzo? All right. You can't nuzzle me while I'm recording. What was I saying? Oh, so kids enjoyed it, adults enjoyed it, and then adults enjoyed it. The Muppet Show was actually pitched as a puppet show for adults to producer Sir Lou Grade, who Bunsen Honeydew is based on, by the way.
Yes, that is true.
Thank you, Bunsen.
You are very welcome.
Me, 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 me.
Thanks, Beaker. These guys are helpful.
Me, 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 me.
Well, no, you can't hang out. You gotta go hang out with Bunsen.
Me, 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 me.
I mean, he's not doing any experiments today, is he?
Me, 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 me.
Oh. Well, just help him out. Listen, I'm sure if you tell him that you're concerned, he'll take extra precautions.
Me, 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 me.
Yeah, I don't want to get in between a lover spat. You have to deal.
Me, 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 me.
Oh, just you? I thought you both were.
Me, me, me.
Huh. Anyway, puppet show for adults. Because it was super popular, they were like, hey, we got to make a movie and make even more money. And so they did. The film had a budget of approximately $8 million, and it pulled in over $65 million, which is a big deal. I mean, that is a huge return. The film was directed by James Frawley, who was an Emmy-winning director, mostly known for directing TV series The Monkees, a musical series. The script was written by Jerry Jewell and Jack Burns. The script you're going to hear, the 10 pages of script that I'm going to read, they're not great. I'm letting you know now. What ended up on screen was much stronger. I'm guessing that a lot of it was rewritten just based on budget. You'll see a lot of the Muppets come in at the beginning in cars and they introduce themselves. It's not very effective, and it probably cost a lot more money than was necessary to introduce all of them that way. That said, the dialogue also changed and was much funnier on screen, so we'll talk about that later on. There's also, of course, the usual Muppet chaos on screen, which we don't really get in the script so much. Jerry Jewell was indeed a writer for The Muppet Show. Jack Burns was the head writer on The Muppet Show. So I'm not really sure why this version of the script kind of misses the mark. But again, we'll talk a little bit more about that later on.
Side note, you may notice that I've slightly changed the voice of one Muppet character. It's because I wasn't happy with my imitation of that character, so I decided to go a slightly different way.
And now, without any further ado, I present to you
The Muppet Movie! Oh, yeah!
Thanks, Gonzo.
You betcha!
If you would like to skip the script read, go to this timestamp. Beaker.
Me, me. Me, me, me.
The Muppet Movie, written by Jerry Jewell and Jack Burns, June 12, 1978.
Introductory note. All the roles in this film are played by human beings, with the exception of the core family of Muppets we know from the television series, and a few Muppet characters that appear quickly as visual jokes, e.g. the Roadhog Kermit encounters on his bicycle. Although a bear driving a car and a frog trying to order a drink in a bar are not ordinary sights in our world, they are in this film. None of the human beings in the Muppet Movie are ever the least bit surprised to find themselves talking to frogs, and dogs, and pigs, and chickens. The Muppet Movie. Fade in. The globe of the world fills the screen. As it turns, the camera widens to reveal the globe balanced on the finger of a life-size statue of a 1930s movie director. This is part of the Art Deco logo of World Film Industries, which decorates the main gate of a bustling movie studio, now seen in the BG background. As the shot continues widening, a uniformed guard comes out of his gatehouse. Camera pans to show a huge chauffeur-driven 1925 Rolls-Royce Phaeton, which glides to a stop in front of the gatehouse. The guard picks up a clipboard and approaches the car. Guard's POV. The black glass window of the passenger compartment glides down, revealing Statler and Waldorf, the two old codgers from the Muppet Show.
I'm Statler.
I'm Waldorf.
Guard, checking clipboard. Yes, gentlemen. The Muppet Movie is showing in the executive screening room, straight ahead and across from Stage 3.
You call this a film? I've seen detergents that leave a better film than this.
Statler glares at him.
Just warming up.
Sound of a loud horn honk. Wide an angle as the Phaeton moves on. A jazzy gold metallic dune buggy rolls up to the guard. In the buggy are Dr. Teeth driving, Floyd, Janice, Zoot, and Animal, who sits at his drums in the back seat. Floyd, Janice, and Zoot all have their instruments.
Greetings, O Guardian of the Gate. We are Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem. The Doctor. And we're the Mayhem.
Follow that limousine.
This calls for traveling music.
The band breaks into bright, happy rock music and drives down the studio street.
Bow, 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 bow.
Some costumed extras react. The gatehouse. A bright red roadster convertible of late 1920s vintage screeches to a stop. A rubber chicken hangs from the car antenna and there is a large rubber-bulbed horn fastened to the side. Fozzie Bear is driving. In the rumble seat is Gonzo the Great and a Muppet Chicken.
Hiya, 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 Fozzie Bear the Comedian.
He squeezes the rubber bulb on the horn. A flag pops out with honk honk on it.
This car is so funny.
The guard checks his clipboard and smiles.
I'm Gonzo the Great. Don't grovel unless you just can't help yourself.
The roadster drives off and is replaced by a new pink Rolls-Royce Corniche, driven by a uniformed chauffeur with a shaved head. In the back seat, nearly buried in a cloud of white fur pillows, is Miss Piggy, a vision in mauve satin.
Don't you dare not know my name, you handsome brute.
Good afternoon, Miss Piggy. I believe the others are already in the screening room.
Yes, I always have to be last, so they can wait for me. Oh, the sacrifices of stardom.
She drives off. The guard consults clipboard and starts to walk into guardhouse. He spots something and stops. Guard's POV. Kermit pedals in on his bicycle. In the basket is his nephew, Robin.
Hi, Charlie. Sorry I'm late.
Hiya, Kermit. Who's your friend?
I'm Robin, Kermit's nephew.
Well, good to meet you, Mr. Frog.
Kermit pedals off.
Mister? He called me Mr. Frog. Boy, this rich and famous business is terrific.
Interior screening room. It is a plush, elegant screening room, typical of Hollywood film studios. There is a raised dais at the back with a desk in front of the seats where VIPs sit. As the Muppet cast members chat among themselves, there is an air of hushed excitement and nervousness. Amid the general babble, we hear,
Miss Piggy, with a flick of the wrist.
Pardon my boa.
Ralph.
I wonder if they cut out some of those chase scenes.
Floyd.
I'll bet the car painting number looks good.
Statler.
So far, I like the movie.
You haven't seen it. That's what I like about it.
Fozzie.
Oh, I'm so nervous. I hope I like me.
Scooter.
What do you mean we can't buy popcorn?
Sam.
Is this film G-rated? Otherwise, I'm leaving.
Kermit and Robin enter the room.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the very first screening of the Muppet movie. Now listen, everyone. Before we begin, I want to thank you all for your work and tell you how much I appreciate.
Speeches aren't necessary, Kermit. Roll film.
Well, before we roll film...
Animal appears next to Kermit, very threatening.
Roll film! Roll film!
Kermit instantly hits the button on the intercom.
Roll film!
Animal exits frame. The house lights slowly start to fade. Kermit sits down next to Robin. Interior screening room, Muppets POV. Up on the screen comes the Art Deco logo of World Film Industries. That fades into an image of the universe. In the main title sequence, we see the endless reaches of outer space. Very gradually, in what appears to be one continuous shot, we move in to one particular galaxy, towards one particular star with its solar system, toward the third planet in that system, seeing eventually that it is the planet Earth with its moon. Music. Opening theme. The music is an incredibly pretentious orchestral theme, which gradually evolves as we move closer and closer into a simpler, lovelier tune. Do-doom, do-doom. Camera continues to move in on western hemisphere of the Earth, zeroing in on the southern United States and eventually into a high helicopter shot over a swamp in the deep south. Live action, although the blend between animation and live will not be noticeable. That's interesting. I wonder what they mean. A single banjo appears to emerge from the orchestration. As the credits come to an end, we move in low over an open glade in the dense swamp. We see a small green figure seated on a partially submerged log. It is Kermit playing a banjo. The camera continues to move closer. Exterior swamp day. At ground level, moving in close on Kermit, the music is very simple indeed, and now Kermit bursts into a song. Do-doom, do-doom. It is a lovely little tune about how content he is with his lot in life. The final chord of the song has just rung off. La-da-dee-da-doo. When we hear blood-curdling screams for help coming from nearby, Kermit glances up for just a beat, then, unconcerned, concentrates again on his banjo, picking out a quiet little tune. Noodling around with it, he glances up again. Kermit's POV. From a curtain of hanging mangrove branches comes a small, flat-bottomed boat. Rowing like crazy is a fisherman, the first of our cameo guest stars. He is wearing typical fisherman's gear and a hat studded with flies. Actually, the outfit looks like it was bought at Saks Fifth Avenue Sporting Department. He also wears dark glasses and a diamond ring you could hold hockey games on. This guy is showbiz. Fisherman, angry.
Hey, didn't you hear me just now?
Of course I heard you.
Well, what did you think?
I thought you were off key.
Off key? That wasn't singing. It was screaming. Who can tell these days?
Be serious.
I've lost my sense of direction.
Have you thought about Hare Krishna?
I mean, I'm lost.
One second.
A fly buzzes past Kermit. He snaps at it.
Darn. I missed. You know, that's the first thing to go on a frog. His tongue. The tongue goes and he can't catch flies.
Rough, but I've got to get out of this swamp. I've got a plane to catch.
With that tongue? No way. But seriously, there is a boat dock a little downstream.
Terrific. It was getting a little spooky in this place.
Nothing to be afraid of. A few bats, some water moccasins, an occasional alligator.
Alligator?
That's right.
Did you say alligator?
Read my lips. Alligator.
It's just that we don't have alligators where I come from. See, I winged in from Hollywood.
Hollywood?
That's right.
Did you say Hollywood?
Read my lips. Hollywood.
Never heard of it. Is it another swamp?
Actually, it's more like a jungle. See, I'm an agent. As a matter of fact, I used to represent a frog like you. He could have been a superstar.
What happened to him?
He croaked.
He breaks up at his own joke. Kermit to camera.
Am I going to have to put up with this stuff through the whole movie?
The fisherman reaches into his pocket and pulls out a copy of Daily Variety.
There's an ad in here you should be interested in.
He shuffles through the paper and shows it to Kermit. Over Kermit's shoulder, seeing ad in paper. Kermit reading.
World Film Industries announces open auditions for frogs wishing to become rich and famous. Well, thanks anyway, but I'm happy where I am.
I'd think about that audition, kid. You got talent. And remember, rich and famous.
Rich and famous.
If you do come west, look me up. You'll need an agent.
How much do you charge?
Only 80%.
What?
Hey, I'm a big agent. I take a big bite.
So does Arnie Alligator.
Kermit points. Arnie the alligator, a real alligator, closes in fast. Fisherman screams and jumps overboard, wildly trying to scramble to shore and away from Arnie.
Don't worry. Arnie only eats kosher.
Fisherman singing to alligator.
When Irish eyes are smiling.
Exterior bait shop day. The shop looks a lot like a news kiosk one sees on the streets of New York, except that it is made with weathered old barn boards. The sign over the window is roughly painted and has been worn by years of rain. It says, George and Kermit, bait. On the counter sit half a dozen plastic buckets, and inside are various scrawled notices about fishing. Kermit is talking to George, who sits on a stool outside the kiosk, cameo guest star. He is wearing bib overalls. He is smoking his cigar.
You see, George, the auditions in Hollywood are a whole 10 days away. Plenty of time to get there.
How do you plan to go?
I've got enough saved for bus fare. All I have to do is ride my bike into Haverhill.
Kermit, how long have you known me?
Since always, George.
Have I ever led you wrong?
Well,
except for that time.
Those times.
Okay, so we're all human. But I'm telling you, Kermit, don't leave the swamp. The people out there are animals.
So what's a frog? Mashed potatoes?
I'm serious, Kermit. This is your home. You have friends. A frog belongs here.
But I've got a chance to be rich and famous. I mean, it's hard to just toss that off. Maybe it's a long shot, but I could be loved by millions someday.
I love you now.
Oh, George, I love you too. And I love the swamp, but I just have to try. Just once.
Yeah, I know. There's only one once.
I'll miss you, George.
We'll all miss you. A beat. When you get rich and famous, send me some good cigars.
Kermit turns sadly and walks away. Exterior swamp. Night. A picturesque moonlit night. Kermit is walking by the water's edge, carrying a lantern.
Okay.
And we're done.
Yay! Okay, there's a lot to unpack there. Oh my goodness. Let's talk problems with the Muppet movie script. Holy cow. There's so many things I want to discuss.
Let's start with the note. That note to readers is a very strange thing. A lot of people who are sort of vaguely familiar with the Muppets might say, oh, well, I can see why that's necessary. You have to explain to people the world of the Muppets. Well, okay, but in most movie scripts, you just sort of do that within the script. You might add something like Kermit, a frog, who is one of the Muppet characters, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, person doesn't take note that this is a puppet, and you may make that note maybe once again in the action. Then you don't have to make the note anymore. You don't need a 2-paragraph introduction to explain that. But also, more strangely, this was essentially an in-house production. It was created by people that work for the Muppets for ITC, the company that produces the Muppet Show. Who are they explaining that to?
Now, it is possible that there are some unnamed financiers who wanted to see the script, so they thought it was necessary. Or it's possible that Jim Henson and team were shopping it around to studios like United Artists, MGM, Paramount, the big studios of the time. It's very possible they were looking for distribution and they felt that was necessary. Okay, still, in my opinion, very weird approach to do that. Now let's get into the script. So the way we introduce the Muppet world is to start into outer space, I guess to indicate, hey, look, it's a Muppet world. It's not your world, it's our world. Again, weird, unnecessary. We get it. It's not the normal world. That is really established. What's on the page is a good first draft for sure. But the script is obviously very different from what ends up on screen if you've seen the Muppet movie. There's a lot of changes, not just dialogue and descriptions, but tone and approach in that this script doesn't seem to get the Muppets. It's wrong. Oh, it's so frustrating.
I'm hopping mad.
As a for instance, let's look at how all the Muppets are introduced. Driving in cars, because, you know, they're rich TV stars. I get it. But first of all, I'm sure that was cut from the final because, holy cow, that's expensive. Every character has to have a car. It was a fancy car. That's a lot of puppetry done outside in special vehicles that need to be modified. That's a lot of money, so there's no doubt that was cut for that. But also, it's not fun. The characters are all kind of being jerks as they come in. Styler and Waldorf, who are supposed to be jerks, don't even get to be jerks. They don't banter. Waldorf makes a joke and Styler just stares at him.
That's not fun. In the final, when Statler and Waldorf drive up, it's,
I'm Statler.
I'm Waldorf.
We're here to heckle the Muppet movie.
Ah, yes, gentlemen. That's whatever he says in private screening room C or something like that.
Private screening?
Yeah, they're afraid to show it in public.
I mean, that's correct. What we get in this script is terrible. Fozzie Bear.
He's the best.
I love Fozzie. I do not like this introduction of him. He seems like a jerk. Fozzie Bear in real life is a jerk. Oh, and you know what I forgot to mention? I forgot to mention the name of the studio. As the camera comes down over the lot, in the script it's called, what is it called? World Film Industries, Film World, whatever. I don't feel like going back to look, because that means I have to look at the script again. In the movie, it's Worldwide Pictures, which is both goofy enough and realistic enough to sound like a real movie studio. What's in the script sounds like a factory that makes film cans or something. Whatever it is, doesn't work. What else doesn't work? Oh, when the band comes in and introduces themselves almost exactly as they do within the context of the story later on in the movie. That's super redundant. I wonder if that, along with the budgetary concern, was what cut that entire sequence out where someone said,
This is exactly the same as later on.
Yes, I'm guessing that Frank Oz said it.
I don't know, man.
That whole opening sequence drives me nuts. And then we get into the screening room. It has Muppet Chaos, but doesn't feel like the right Muppet Chaos. It kind of reminds me of the recent Muppet Show special that appeared on Disney Plus, which was good and fun, but the Muppet Chaos was just a bit off. It wasn't quite the right kind of manic energy that the Muppets usually have. What's on paper is about, I don't know, like 8 characters just screaming into a void. Scooters just saying to no one in particular, we can't get popcorn. Sam the Eagle's just saying to no one in particular, this film better be G-rated. Fozzie Bear's just worrying randomly to nobody in particular that he hopes he likes himself. In the final script, it's something like,
I hope I'm good or I won't be able to live with myself.
To which Bunsen Honeydew says,
well then you'll have to move, won't you?
Miss Piggy yells out to Kermit,
I tried to save you a seat, but somebody took it.
Even Robin isn't used correctly in the script. He comes in with Kermit. He makes a comment about enjoying being a star or an adult or something like that. Then he goes in. In the movie, he is used as the point of view of children watching the movie. He leans into Kermit and says,
Uncle Kermit, is this really the story of how the Muppets got started?
To which Kermit says something like,
sorta, kinda,
or
in a way,
something like that. I don't know. But you get the point. So that way, that's a signal to kids. This is not really the story of how the Muppets came together. This is a movie, in case you didn't get that from the title. We also get an understanding of who Miss Piggy is from the beginning and what their relationship is from their very brief interaction.
Oh, Kermit, I tried to save you a seat, but somebody took it.
Right? And then a few minutes later, it's,
okay, Kermit, roll film.
You know everything you need to know about Piggy there. You don't really get that when she's on her own in the car in the script. Again, I would love to know if this really was the two writers that are credited. It doesn't feel like it is. It feels like it was written by somebody who only has a cursory knowledge of the Muppets. On the other hand, I've been thinking about it, and it could also have just been Burns and Jewel kind of buckling under pressure. There was probably a lot of pressure on those two to get it right. I don't know how much time they had to write the thing in between making the Muppet Show. So maybe they just felt, oh, we need to open this big and bold because that's what movies are. And so they went big and they went bold. And then Jim Henson saw it and went,
I don't think so.
And so they had to change it all. In sum, that whole screening scene on screen is terrific. The fact that we see all these relationships. If you know the Muppet Show, you're watching characters interact that don't often get to interact. So like, that's a really fun part of it. The idea that Muppets are just hanging out chatting, but also being completely insane before the movie starts is amazing. And it really absolutely prepares you for the movie in an interesting way because the next thing we get in the movie is actually very grounded. When we get to the swamp, we end up with a scene that is very similar to what's on screen. The stuff with the agent, Bernie the agent, meet Bernie the alligator is what's on screen. We get similar stuff on paper. What ended up on screen is a little sharper, a little faster paced, a little more clever and shorter, by the way. They cut out the joke about how the agent used to represent another frog and he croaked. That to me was mean-spirited. I'm glad they got rid of it. So I don't know who wrote that line. It is not a Muppet line. I mean, even if you look at all the stuff with Doc Hopper in the script, Doc Hopper never says he's killing frogs to make his food. As a matter of fact, it's even implied by Kermit that he's not killing them, because Kermit says, when he's asked, can't you see yourself in my commercials or whatever it is Doc Hopper says, he looks at the screen and says,
all I see are frogs on tiny crutches.
Which upsets Max, by the way, and that's the beginning of Max's arc.
And I know there's a frog assassin in it, but the only thing he gets to shoot is a wooden cutout. Kill frogs.
I'm also really glad that they cut that line where Kermit says, between screaming and singing, who can tell the difference these days? That makes Kermit sound old and stodgy, as outdated as Edgar Bergen and Bob Hope. Yeah, that line needed to go. You don't keep your characters contemporary by making them sound like they're 1,000 years old.
From the swamp, we get into a scene with Kermit and someone named George. Well, I can tell you for sure that was supposed to be George Burns. George Burns was an actor and comedian who was well known for decades. He starred on radio as Burns and Allen with his wife, Gracie Allen. He always had the raspy voice. Even before he was elderly, he had a raspy voice. He did a lot of movies in the 70s and 80s. George Burns had a franchise. He was the original Ant-Man. No, I'm kidding. He was in a series of films called Oh God. It was Oh God, Oh God Book 2, and Oh God, You Devil, where he played God and the Devil. The first one was directed by Carl Reiner and starred Muppet's favorite, John Denver. It was a good movie. Anyway, the scene is very clearly written for George Burns, and the scene was obviously cut, and it was cut for good reason. It is sappy. It does not have the right Muppet tone at all. The Muppets are earnest, yes. Saccharine, sweet, and sappy? Not really. Don't get me wrong, Kermit, Gonzo, especially Gonzo early on, Fozzie, those guys all do get dramatic moments in The Muppet Show. They have serious concerns about their talent, their lives, themselves, their friends. But sappiness is a whole other level. And to have a very long scene of sappy is not really very Muppety. And if there is something sappy, they will break it up, or at least end it on some kind of wacky note, something that takes us back into the Muppet chaos. Anyway, this scene with George does not do that. I also don't know if it sets up Kermit's character correctly. He is very focused on rich and famous in this. In the movie, he seems more curious about rich and famous, but his goal is to make millions of people happy. Now, the rich and famous thing is still in the movie. He gets the
standard rich and famous contract.
And he's very happy with that. It's kind of an interesting way to hedge your character arc.
Which isn't something you should normally do. You want your character arc to be very clear in your screenplay. The fact that they hedged this a little bit and that it works is kind of impressive. And that brings us to the end of 10 pages. So what do we have at the end of these 10 pages of script? Well, we have a very childish Muppet movie. The movie's missing its trademark banter, its trademark sort of adult tone, where there's jokes that kids miss but adults get. It's missing the relationship stuff. This script misses the mark. And thankfully, someone told Mark to fix it. Or somebody. Probably Jim Henson and Frank Oz. I'm guessing that a lot of what was fixed from them just riffing or sitting and having a conversation discussing, hey, let's go this way instead of that way. I mean, listen, The Muppet Movie is a fantastic film that I absolutely love. It is hands down one of my favorite films. It was entered into the National Archive a couple of years ago as an important work. It won 2 Academy Awards. Let's talk a little bit about cultural impact of the Muppet movie, or rather, cultural reflection, maybe? Because we're going to talk about some of these cameos. There are a lot of cameos in this film. Let's just quickly list the cast. Jim Henson, Frank Oz, Jerry Nelson, Richard Hunt, Dave Goles. Those are your main Muppet performers. Our two human co-stars are Charles Durning, who was a big star at the time, everybody. That was a big deal. Austin Pendleton, a big star to me. But okay, these are the cameos, and they run the gamut. It's so fascinating. We have Edgar Bergen, Milton Berle, Mel Brooks, James Coburn, Dom DeLuise, Elliot Gould, Bob Hope, Madeline Kahn, Carol Kane, Cloris Leachman, Steve Martin, Richard Pryor, Telly Savalas, Orson Welles, and Paul Williams, not to mention the mention of Heifetz by Ralph the Dog.
I'm no Heifetz, but I get by.
Yeah, Heifetz was a violinist, and Ralph the Dog is playing piano. This is the kind of wonderful humor that the Muppets do. I don't know if that line's in the script. Hold on, I'm going to pause and go check. I'm going to bet you $1 million it's not.
So, no, as I suspected, that really great joke is not in this early
problematic
draft of the Muppet movie.
But it did remind me of something. I hadn't looked at the entire script in quite some time. I only re-reviewed the first 10 pages for the show. What I forgot was that much of the script is actually reflective of what's on screen, which makes these opening sequences that much more of a mystery. Let's go back to the cameos. Okay,
They had a couple of really big deals. Richard Pryor was not just a movie star, he was one of the biggest stand-ups at the time. Steve Martin was the biggest stand-up of the time, filling arenas.
And then we have like Mel Brooks, Dom DeLuise, arguably Elliot Gould and Madeline Kahn and definitely Telly Savalas.
Hot off a 5-year
run as TV detective
and pop culture touchstone, Kojak,
were all pretty big gets for the Muppet movie.
Edgar Bergen, of course, was a ventriloquist, but wasn't as well known by the late 70s. You know, he was more of a star of the 30s and 40s. He probably started in vaudeville, is my guess. I'm not looking it up, but I'm assuming that that's where he got his start. He was, of course, a big inspiration to Jim Henson, and Jim Henson did dedicate the film to him because Edgar Bergen had passed away soon after he had filmed his scenes. He was a ventriloquist on radio, which is sort of fascinating in itself. At the end of the day, the Muppet movie, the first 10 minutes of the film, absolutely capture everything you need to know about Muppets, the relationships between the characters, and the relationship that the Muppets in general have with the world at large. On paper, not so much. And because it doesn't do it on paper, it was fixed. It was fixed, like many of the scripts that we go over. That's it. I guess we're done for this month. Next month, I'm going to do a very serious drama. So I guess there's nothing more to say except see you at the table read.
Bork, bork, bork.
If you want to continue this conversation and follow me on the socials, I love talking movies, TV, and comic books at The Reality Comics on Blue Sky, which is like Twitter but not, and Instagram. That's both at The Reality Comics. Thank you so much for listening. See you at the table read.
First 10 Pages is written, hosted, and edited by Keith Planet. Music by Edison Carter. Any corrections, questions, or comments, please reach out via social media on Blue Sky or Instagram at The Reality Comics. The First 10 Pages, copyright 2026.
The flim is okie doke. How's that?